morning and welcome to Alcoholic Anonymous AA meeting on air. My name is Laura and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello.
Hey Laura.
Hey Laura.
We will start our meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This morning we'll be hearing from three speakers from the fellowship, and our speakers this morning will be sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. Olivia, would you like to share?
Sure, thanks Laura. Hi, I'm Olivia. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is Young People in Sobriety at the 24-Hour Club on Pollen Street, Monday, Wednesday and Saturdays.
Hi, Olivia.
Hi, Olivia.
Hi, Olivia.
I guess, you know, the journey that got me into AA, you know, wasn't much fun. Most people don't come into this fellowship at a good time in their drinking, and I certainly wasn't. You know, I can remember when I was younger, I think it was around age 10, that I sort of realised that, you know, I felt quite a bit different from other people. I felt, you know, very insecure, very concerned with what everybody else thought of me. You know, if your favourite colour was black, mine was black. If it was white, my favourite colour was suddenly white. And that's, you know, I, you know, pretty much made most of my decisions based on those things as well, you know, just following what other people wanted me to do or expected. And then I discovered alcohol and, you know, that gave me the freedom to sort of be the person that I thought I was meant to be. You know, I could talk to boys and I was just, you know, more confident. I wasn't so paranoid. I could do all these wonderful, crazy things. It gave me the confidence to, you know, go overseas when I was 18 by myself and do a lot of travelling, which, you know, kind of coincided with taking a lot of drugs and sort of brought me home within a year. And then, you know, my drinking just sort of just kept going and going. I mean, I, you know, certainly didn't drink every day when I was, you know, 18, 19, but, you know, by the time when I was 26, when I came in, you know, that was all I could do. You know, it'd be my first thought in the morning would be, you know, I need a drink. You know, I'd have the shakes. I couldn't concentrate on anything else, and I was just so full of fear. You know, I'd leave the house, I'd hear a car door slam, I'd hear someone laughing, and it would just jump me right out of my skin. You know, and I just remember one morning waking up drunk, and I kept drinking, and I sort of got to the stage where I was just like, this is no way to live anymore. And that's when I had my first suicide attempt, which ended me up in hospital. And, you know, that essentially was, you know, the very last day I had a drink on the 22nd of February this year. And, you know, I'm so glad that happened. You know, I'm really glad I didn't die that day, because that sort of brought me to this place where I found out about a, you know, a great sort of treatment centre which got me in. And, you know, they pretty much, you know, introduced me to AA, got me in touch with a sponsor and the steps, you know, and in five quite long months, I'll be honest, the longest months of my life, you know, everything's turned around sort of. In the, you know, very last days of my drinking, all I could do was drink. I couldn't do anything else. That was my one thought for the day. And, you know, now I've just got all the little things back. You know, I can get up in the morning. I don't feel like crap. I'm not, you know, I don't have that intense fear, you know, in my head. And that's not to say that the fear doesn't come back occasionally, but now I know how to deal with it. You know, and it's only, you know, through doing what's been suggested to me in this program. And, yeah, I mean, you know, AA's given me quite a lot of things. You know, I've got a place to live now. You know, I didn't really have a place to live at the end of my drinking. I've got a job through AA and the people there. You know, I've got real friends, you know, friends who actually want to talk to me. You know, none of my drinking friends, you know or care where I am. And I don't really know who care where they are, to be honest. You know, I guess what AA is teaching me is it's teaching me how to be an adult. You know, the fact that you don't spend all your money in your bank account each week, and you know, it's just, I don't know, the satisfaction of, you know, just really stupid things like, you know, the car's going to need a warrant soon and I'm going to have the money to pay for that. And, you know, I didn't lose a lot through my drinking because I didn't really have a lot to lose. But I'm so grateful that I'm still quite young and I'm going to, you know, hopefully have quite a good life out of this. So thanks for asking me to share.
That's excellent. Thanks, Olivia.
Thanks, Olivia.
David, would you like to share?
I'm David. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
My home group is the Otahu Lunchtime Experience on Tuesday at 12:30 on Church Street in Otahu. Very grateful to have the opportunity to come in here today and share a bit of my story and basically what it was like, what happened and what I did and what life is like for me now. You know, really related to what Olivia was saying there about... you know, the fear of other people and people pleasing and wanting to fit in, and you know, that's how I often felt when I was you know, growing up. I was often felt like a square peg in a round hole, and you know, as Olivia was saying, the freedom that alcohol gave me, you know, once I'd had one or two drinks, you know, I felt on fire. You know, I was confident and that fear left me, and you know, I didn't mind what I said. I wasn't so self-conscious and that anxiety left, and you know, and I thought that was brilliant, you know. And the only problem sort of came when I realised that I couldn't control my drinking. You know, the way my brain sort of works is it just works in extremes, and you know, if four beers is good for me, then, you know, 10's going to be even better and 20's going to be better after that. And, you know, it was sort of a downward spiral from there, and it progressed quite slowly. You know, it progressed from, you know, the occasional weekend binge drinking and getting drunk, and then, you know, that would sort of start midweek. And, you know, by the end of my drinking, it was, you know, four or five nights a week I was binge drinking and always to blackout. And, you know, it wasn't that I intended to do that. You know, sometimes there was definitely times I'd go out and know I was going to get drunk, but quite often it was me going out and going, it's not going to be like last time, and, you know, I'm not going to get so drunk this time. And it's just trying to control it and trying to put limits in place and try different drinks. You know, I'll stay off the hard stuff, I'll only have beer, and, you know, I'll try and have a glass of water between each beer, maybe then I won't get so drunk. And at some point in the night, those glasses of water would turn to shots, and I'm not quite sure what point that was. And, you know, eventually, by the end of my drinking, you know, not to dwell too much on the past, but, you know, I was in a homeless shelter, you know, and I was going, you know, sometimes 2 or 3 days without food. I was in about 25 grand worth of debt. I was separated from my wife, you know, and I'd got another woman pregnant, and I'd ended up in the cells, and, you know, again. And, you know, that was finally when I ended up in jail, you know, for, you know, one of several times. This last time I just sort of, you know, I had my face all cut up and I had a fractured toe, and I was just a mess, and I started going to AA at this point, but I hadn't been doing anything in terms of actually following the program of AA. You know, I hadn't approached anyone and asked them to be my sponsor, and I hadn't taken any of the steps or read the big book, and I was just basically going to meetings and thinking that was enough, and, you know, and then trying to do it on my own self-will, you know, if I only tried a little harder to not drink, you know, I'd be able to stop. And, you know, it eventually all came to a head, you know, and I basically said, look, I can't live to like this. As Olivia said, you know, there's got to be more to life than this. You know, so I eventually, you know, made the decision that the best thing for me was to go to some sort of rehab, and I asked a couple of people in the fellowship and family friends who I knew dealt with alcoholism, and we were the recommend, and two different people on the same day that I contacted, they both said the retreat in Otahu is the place to go, you know, and we'd really recommend that for you. So I made the decision to go, and I begged my parents basically to send me there, and how desperate I was for this, because I desperately wanted to change. I'd wanted a different life from what I'd had, you know, and, you know, I could see where my life and my drinking and my choices and actions had got me. And, you know, I eventually got to that point of desperation that they talk about, you know, the gift of desperation, and was really ready to surrender and go to any lengths. You know, I had it described to me as by an alcohol counsellor, you know, that this journey was going to be like jumping in a river, and, you know, you could try and swim upstream, but eventually you'll get exhausted and you drown, and, you know, that's kind of running your life on self-will and trying to control the outcomes of everything. And, you know, you could go into the river rigid and not want to change anything and be rigid in your values, but then you'll drown as well. And the only way that you're going to get through this is if you float on your back and you float downstream and you kind of just go with the flow and see where things lead. And that's what I've been trying to do, is sort of surrender to, you know, this journey and what gets put in my way, and just take the opportunities that come, you know. You know, it was often described to me as the hell principle, you know, honesty, openness and willingness. And, you know, at the end of my drinking, you know, I was desperate enough and I was just in such a bad state. And unfortunately, that's where I had to go to. But I'm very grateful for that now, because, you know, that was when I finally had the opportunity to start recovery. And, you know, I've been sober since that date, and it's been absolutely incredible. You know, I finally came up to Auckland and came to the retreat. And I met my sponsor and asked him to be a sponsor. And I guess, you know, when I decided to do that, I saw in him a peace and a serenity and a zest for life that I wanted. You know, he had something I wanted. So I asked him to sponsor me so I could have basically, you know, selfishly some of what he had. You know, and he agreed to sponsor me and took me through the big book and took me through the steps. And that's when things really started changing for me, because, you know, I've tried other ways to stop drinking, and, you know, I've tried my own self-will, and I've tried, you know, counsellors and every sort of way that I could possibly think of to try and stop, and none of that worked. Until, you know, AA has been, for me, the only way that I've been able to stay stopped. You know, what the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous gives to me is a design for living that basically is, you know, trust God, or a God of your own understanding. It's a spiritual, not a religious program. You know, and I chose my own conception of some form of higher power or creator or whatever I chose to call it. And, you know, I trusted that his plan or her plan was better than mine had been, because that had got me to that point. You know, and I began to clean house and clean away the wreckage of my past, you know. I was just a Tasmanian devil ripping through other people's lives, you know, and just causing all sorts of carnage and chaos to other people, you know. And I started trying to repair that, and, you know, because that was, you know, that was one of the reasons I would keep going back drinking, was the guilt and shame of the past was a reason I would pick up. So by beginning to clear that away, you know, I could start living in the day and take one day at a time. You know, and the last one has been, you know, service to others, doing things like this, you know, taking opportunities to share this message, because this has been, you know, freely given to me in pure condition. And, you know, that's how I show my gratitude, is through action. So, you know, I'm so grateful for the life I have today. I have an incredible life. You know, I've just found employment again. You know, I'm a contributing member of society, which is fantastic. You know, and I have a house of my own with my own furniture, which I didn't have for 8 months. And, you know, I have a warm meal, and I have, you know, I'm so grateful and humble today for everything I have. And I have just an outlook on life that's so positive. And, you know, I think I'll just finish on this. You know, I was just saying about the one day at a time. You know, one day at a time is really manageable for me. And at the start, it was just not drinking one day at a time. And, you know, for me now, it's about the quality of my sobriety. So I'm really trying to focus on just doing the next best thing, taking it one day at a time. And, you know, if I'm dwelling in the past, I'm generally living in depression and shame. And if I'm living in the future, I'm living in anxiety and fear of either losing something I have or not getting something I want. So I just try and stay grounded and just try and stay in the day. And I mean, with trust in my higher power and the support of the AA meetings and the AA fellowship that I go to, I've been able to stay sober one day at a time, and the life I have today is amazing. It is incredible. I have all of the promises that the Big Book says, and you know, a peace and serenity that I wouldn't trade in for a world. So very grateful for AA and everything that's been able to give for me, and I hope that anybody out there listening this morning, if you are struggling with alcohol, you know, take that first step and come into a meeting and meet some people, and you know, they don't want anything from you, they're just there to help you, and that's been my experience, and there's some incredible, generous, helpful people who have really guided me and changed my life and given me a life I couldn't even dream of. So I think with that, I'll leave it there. Thanks, Laura.
Thanks, David. Casey, would you like to share?
Yes, thanks, Laura. Hi, my name's Casey and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Casey.
My home group is Wednesday night in Pakeranga, 7:30, and it's called The Turning Point. And, yeah, I quite like that group. That's a group that I helped open, so I've become quite close to the people in the group there. Which has also been something of a whole experience of me in AA, is actually getting to know people, getting close to people, because through my drinking, that's not something that I wanted to do. I didn't want to know anybody. I wasn't sure whether I wanted to know them or whether I was just scared to know them, or I always had this feeling that somebody's going to find out. Yeah, just a constant fear of somebody finding out about me. And the thing is, I don't actually know what it is that they were ever going to find out. It was just this fear inside me. My drinking started when I was young, and it was quite normal. Just my family drank, so it was never like, oh my gosh, she's drinking and this is out of the ordinary. But one thing people did say to me is that I'm not myself when I drink. I'm a completely different person. But ever since, from the young age, every time I had a drink, I'd go into blackout, so I never actually remembered what person it was that I was fronting when I was drinking. All I knew is I'd go out with a group of people and I'd come home alone. If I came home at all, it ended up I didn't actually have a home to go to, because I'd much prefer to just not have to answer to anybody. And that was pretty much me from a young age. Just on my own, doing what I thought was just absolutely awesome, you know. Out of home when I was 15, in love with the man of my dreams when I was 14 and a half, you know. Had my first pregnancy by the time I was 15, and I'm really grateful now. I had a miscarriage and I now know why. By the time I was 18, I was still with the same partner, but my drinking was completely normal in the group that I hang out with, apart from like the fact that I mentioned before, is I'd always end up going out with people and coming home alone, and I didn't actually know how that happened. And then when people, my loved ones, would try and tell me about my drinking the next day, I'd shut my ears and I'd actually scream at them, don't tell me, don't. I don't want to know. Oh my God, I don't want to know, don't tell me, you know? And I'd sort of laugh it off like it was just nothing, but I never... Yeah, I truly didn't want to know, and I truly didn't care at that point. When I was 18, I had my first child, and I stopped drinking, but I think it was like 9 months after he was born, I picked up the drink again, and again it started off just, I think it was like a New Year's or just simple things, and then it turned back into Thursday nights, Friday nights. But again, I still didn't think anything of it because I was quite young and I couldn't have had a problem. At some point, my partner at the time did say, you're an alcoholic, and he always called me a booze hag, and I thought that was great, you know, that's cool because now I know what I am. I never even thought, hey, that might actually be something that I could work on, or that might be something that is not accepted and as an acceptable way to be in society, I guess. So I just carried on being an alcoholic, and that was my excuse. Why are you drinking again? Because I'm an alcoholic, you know, and that was cool. It wasn't until I was about 25 that I came into AA, and that was through, a whole series of like really bad relationships, really bad events happening that I now know were all of my own making. That I had my hand in them 100%, but I always made out that they'd happened to me. I came into AA and I went to Wednesday night group in St. John's Church in Papeete, and that was really cool. There was a whole bunch of old guys, and if any of the old guys are listening, they'll know who they are. And there was only one lady there, and I thought, oh, okay, this is awesome, because I really know how to, you know, talk to guys and that, and that's cool, because then, you know, I could just do whatever it is and I'll just get whatever I need and not have to actually do any of the work. They talked about the big book and they kept going on and on about how the big books worked in their life and putting the 12 steps into their life. And I went to about 3 meetings, the same meeting, so for 3 weeks, and I was still drinking. And I was thinking, man, this big book, hey, it must be like some secret thing, like the Masons Club or something, you know? I was like, how do I ask for it, you know? I had no idea, like, that it was AA's literature and it was freely open and given to anybody. And I finally got up the courage to ask, what is this big book? And they gave me one. They didn't even ask for payment. They just gave it to me and said, here, take this home and read it. I took it home and I went through a whole lot of mixed emotions. I was like completely angry. I cried. I was happy because there was some sort of solution. But at the same time, I always thought I was different. I always thought I was special. And when I read that book, it shows me that all those things and those feelings that I had, or the situations or the rationalizations in my head as to why I drink, they're very common characteristics of what a garden variety drunk is. And that today is something that I'm really happy to be, because, I mean, if I wasn't an alcoholic, then I really don't know what the hell was wrong with me, eh? Because the things that I were doing were not normal, and they weren't okay, and they were never any good to anybody. I thought they would be helping me for 5 minutes, but they're not going to help my 4 children, you know? I dragged 4 children through my alcoholism. I'm 32 now, and my kids are 11, 14, 7, and 10, and I am 2 years sober, so it was quite a experience for them as well. And I'm only just now learning the things, the damage that I've done to them, by actually being open and taking my eyes off myself, because even though I was doing good deeds for other people, I always did them with some motive that would fix me, you know, that would help me out, that would do something for me. My children were like an extension of me. They weren't actually their own people. And I didn't realise that I was doing that to them until the fog cleared, until I got sober and I can see all that. And it's not only that stuff that I see today, it's because of the literature, it's because of having a sponsor, it's because of going to home groups, and it's because of socialising with healthier people, people that genuinely want to make something of themselves and have a better life. I would never have got that if I'd just stopped drinking, you know? If I could have just stopped drinking, I would have done it. Number one, I would have done it. And number two, I would never have been open to any opportunities. You know, today I have friends that ring me and want nothing. Today I have people that I want to see, people that I actually care about. Like if they tell me something's going on, then I really want to go and find out if they're okay with that, you know. My house is also my house. I heard that shared before. Yeah, it's like, I have things now that I really like, and things that I know my drinking isn't going to destroy, or things that I know that can be slightly heavy and I can actually own them, because I'm not going to be moving house every 5 minutes, you know. I was such a light traveller because I didn't want to own anything because I had to move. And it wasn't because I was drinking, it was because the people in the town or the place, the city or the country, they just weren't the right people for me, so I had to leave, you know. But I always came up with an excuse. So today I have a sponsor, today I have a home group, and today I have Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 Steps, and for that I am forever grateful. And if that's all I ever have to be grateful for, then I'm happy with that too. So thank you.
Thank you, Casey.
Thanks, Casey.
And now we'll have a reading from our big book.
Chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we walked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A. That we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B. That probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C. That God could and would if he were sought.
Thanks, Olivia. This brings us towards the end of our meeting. Our speakers this morning have been from various groups from the Fellowship. If you have a problem with alcohol and you want help, you can phone 0800 AA Works, which will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. There are over 100 AA meetings each week within the Greater Auckland area. For more information, log on to aa.org.nz. Thank you for listening this morning. We will be here again next Sunday at 10:45 a.m. We will now close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
You're on 104.6 FM with the Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. You can hear this program again at planetaudio.org.nz/AA meeting on air.